Show style.
It's your boy Red.
Yo, 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 what's good, y'all? It's your homie, Big T.
And it's your co-hostess with the mostest, CL Styles.
Hey, and you are officially tapped in and tuned in to the hottest podcast that brings you the latest in music, news, and fashion, and the only show that keeps our ears to the streets.
While you grind and shine.
Hey, that's what's up. So today is a very special episode of Mud Talk. As you know, here on Mud Talk, if you've been a listener or a viewer for a long time, you know that mental health is very important to us here on the show.
Yes.
And in honor of Black History Month, every year we always do what's called Dear Black Men, which is an honest conversation about mental health. And so this year we are doing Dear Black Men, an honest conversation about Black men and grief. Just with so much that, you know, is going on in the world, people are losing loved ones. We're losing people that are close to us, friends, acquaintances, coworkers. We just felt that it was important just, you know, to talk about the topic of, you know, Black men and grief and how to deal with it and how not to deal with it. And so we have some questions that some people sent in to us. We also have some other questions that we were able to come up with. And then at the end of the show, we have a very important interview with a young lady, amazing lady named Safana Harris. Over the summer, she experienced a tragedy where her oldest son, Isaiah, was shot and killed. And so we just sat and talked with her about, you know, how that impacted her family, her youngest son, Josiah, her grandkids. And so we really wanted to just to have that conversation to get her story out there, but also too, just to have the conversation of things, you know, just how tragedies like that truly impact a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of young men, you know, Black men who are hurting and who don't know how to cope or how to deal with it in a healthy way. And so we know that hurt people always hurt people.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, we're going to tap in with her story at the end of the show. But before we get into anything, we have to thank, I cannot talk today, right? Because it's here, we are here in Ohio and it's like negative 10 outside.
Exactly. It's cold.
So I think my tongue might be stuck to the roof of my mouth. Something. So, but we have to thank a product placement sponsor today. We want to thank Vion. So Vion came through to the anniversary celebration that we had, and they gave us this amazing beanies, which are really dope.
Yeah.
So super warm, super cool. It says young heart, old soul, and then it's reversible.
Hey.
Yeah. So on the front, so this is the Black side.
Yes, indeed.
That's my favorite side.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is the white side.
I like the white side.
We know.
but, because I'm pure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yes, pure. These two angels on this beanie. But shout out to Vion, man. They dropped, like I said, a new line called Young Heart, Old Soul. They have beanies. They have hoodies. They got t-shirts. They got all kind of stuff, man. So head over to Instagram, sample of Vion, click their merch link that is in their bio on their Instagram page and get into it. So yeah. Shout out to Vion, man, for being the product placement sponsor for the Mud Talk show today.
Yes, indeed.
So,
shout out.
And we all got them. So you got one, too.
Yes, indeed.
So yeah, shout out to them. All right. Now, before we get into anything on the show, I was able to do some research. And y'all know I'm all about my paper. And so I was able to do some research on some mental health facts regarding Black men and grief and then just, you know, mental health in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the statistics that we got, I'm gonna go ahead and start with the first one. It says, according to the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities, Black people are 20% more likely to have serious psychological distress than their white counterparts. And cases of depression are more disabling and difficult to treat than those experienced by white people. It also goes on to say that statistics show that Black men suffer from higher rates of mental health conditions. In fact, they have a greater chance of experiencing severe hopelessness and sadness and feeling overwhelmed than white adults. Social stigmas also, along with the deep distrust in our healthcare system, also play a part in all of this as well, too.
Yes. In a study of almost 300 adults in the African-American community, scientists found that Black men were very concerned with the stigma surrounding mental illness and thus were not open to discussing or acknowledging it. Black masculinity has been traced to slavery when Black African-American men were traded as goods. Strong Black men were recognized and asked to perform highly physical activities. And in today's world, Black men in professional sports and music are highly regarded as hyper-masculine.
Yeah, yeah.
And this pressure to be strong and masculine might contribute to difficulty acknowledging mental health and seeking treatment for it. Aside from debunking Black masculinity, Black men heal by getting adequate mental health support.
Yes. So, man, those statistics are pretty deep.
Yeah, they are.
You know, of course, the one that stuck out to me the most was in today's world, Black men in professional sports and music are highly regarded as hyper-masculine. And this also contributes to the difficulty of Black men acknowledging mental health and seeking treatment for it. And we, you know, we know within our community, going to get help, or if you're grieving, if you're crying, if you're depressed or whatever, is not looked at as being masculine. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not a man if you're crying. You're not a man if you're expressing your emotions. You're not a man if you're going to therapy. And I just want to say that's a lie.
Yeah,
that is a lie. That is a myth. And we're going to debunk that, because it takes a strong Black man to go and say, I'm grieving. Mm-hmm. I miss someone. I'm depressed. I have anxiety. I have a mental health issue, and I'm going to go and do something about it. That's a real man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, I think what stuck out to me was the correlation between the first statistic, which showed, according to the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities, Black people are 20% more likely to have serious psychological distress than white counterparts. But how it correlates to Black masculinity has been traced to slavery when Black African American men were traded as goods. Black men were recognized and asked to perform highly physical activity. So that trauma from what happened 400 years ago is still prevalent in today. So that correlation to me was very jarring.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm glad that Mud Talk is here to start debunking some of these myths and also breaking down barriers and stereotypes. And this is why we have these, you know, conversations, because we just want our brothers and even our sisters out there too. Yeah. And also our young Black men and young Black sisters to know that there is nothing wrong with going to get help.
Yes.
But especially Black men, come on, man. Like, it takes a real man to go and say, I need some help. And there's nothing wrong with it, because we all go through stuff. And the problem is that when we don't acknowledge it, we're not doing anything but passing down that trauma to our kids, our grandkids, nieces, nephews, or whoever. You know, we're just passing down trauma and it just messes up the whole family.
Yes.
You know, so I'm super glad, like I said, that we do this every single year, because it's a very important topic to us, but to, you know, bring awareness to the community in general.
Agreed.
So all right, well, we're gonna go ahead and do a commercial break. When we come back, we are going to get into some of the questions that were sent in to us, as well as some of the questions we were able to think about and kind of discuss with, amongst ourselves. You know, like I said, we do have that very important interview that we are going to show at the end of the show with Miss Safana Harris. So make sure I keep it locked right here on Mud Talk. Want to get the word out about your business or organization? Well, the Hottest Podcast now offers the hottest sponsorship packages, starting as low as $15. That's right, $15 will help you get your business or organization out to millions and millions of listeners heard around the world. So make sure you go to the official Mud Talk Facebook page and check out our sponsorship packages right now. The Hottest Podcast is back with new merch dropping right now. Tap in and check out our latest in hoodies, t-shirts, hats, and
Now we have official Mud Talk water bottles and more. So make sure you head over right now to the official Mud Talk merch store and get into it. And right now, if you order, you'll get 25% off of all of the latest merch in our Mud Talk merch store. So go over to our Instagram page at MudTalk419 and get into all of the latest, newest merch that is available right now. Mud Talk, the only podcast that brings you the latest in music, news, and fashion, and the only show that keeps our ears to the streets while you grind and shine.
What's good, y'all? We are back here on Mud Talk. We want to say thank you to everybody who's been purchasing merch. You know, go check us out on Instagram at Mud Talk 419. We just dropped some new merch that's available right now. And so if you go to our Instagram page, click our link tree, click the link that says merch, and you will see all of our brand new merch that we just dropped. We got what crew necks are there. We got hoodies, hats, water bottles. Yeah, I want a water bottle. Yeah, I need one of them.
Me too.
Water bottles, cups. Aprons if you like to cook.
Yeah.
Onesies for babies, you know.
Basically what he's saying is we have whatever you need.
We got whatever you
need.
Whatever
you need.
In the words of T.I., you can have whatever you like.
Whatever you like.
So yeah, but go ahead and cop that merch. And of course, want to say thank you to everybody who taps in with us each and every Friday night, whether you're watching on Facebook, on YouTube, or whether you're listening to us on streaming platforms, whether it's Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM Radio, or wherever you stream your podcasts. We greatly appreciate you. And you guys are the reason why we've been here for 4 years, man.
Yeah.
We're keeping this thing rolling.
Let's go.
So, all right. So we had some people who sent in some questions to us, and they before we do that, we got another sponsor. See, I'm ready. Yeah, I'm ready.
He's ready.
But I forgot we got to pay another bill real
quick. Hold your horses. Hold back. Stand down.
All right. Let me mute my mic real quick. All right. We got another sponsor before we get into it. CL Styles, who we got?
We have ENT Transportation Family. Are you going somewhere? We got you. ENT Transportation is a low-cost transportation service that offers services to the grocery store, doctor's appointments, work, school, and even airport runs. Services must be scheduled 24 hours in advance. For more information, call 419-820-0549 or 419-578-8040. ENT Transportation will cover any ride that and any destination that you have to make.
I know that's right. And it's as low as $15.
You can't beat $15.
Man, $15?
For real.
That's crazy. To get there and then you pay another $15 to get back.
Come on.
That's $30. That ain't bad.
That's actually what, two Chipotle meals? That's two Chipotle meals.
It's two Chipotle bowls.
You got two Chipotle bowls.
As low as two Chipotle bowls.
Come on.
So, yes, but shout out to ENT Transportation for being one of the sponsors here on Mud Talk. So let's go ahead and give them a hand clap real quick. Let's go. All right. So, as I said before, we had to pay them bills real quick. Mm-hmm. We had some people who sent in some questions in regards to Black men and grief. And so we thought it would just be good just to have a conversation about that. And then we also have some questions that we were able to come up with amongst ourselves as we were having this discussion earlier. So the first question that we had sent in, it says, how do you feel the world sees Black men when they are experiencing grief?
Mm. I think that's a good question. But I often want to change that world and say, how do we see each other when we are experiencing grief? I think that the world, and I want to say Black individuals as well, has caught up to mental health.
Yes. Right?
Mental health is big. I feel like individuals that's Black have caught up to what's going on and expressing themselves. I still feel like there's a whole culture, that probably still needs to express themselves. But I don't think that that's just Black. I think that that's white. I think that that's Indian. I think that that's everyone. It's nothing wrong with talking about your problems, talking through them to a listening ear.
Yeah, I agree. And I definitely agree with what you just said. I feel like the world has caught up to what we have going on in our community, and they are telling us that as Black men, it is okay to cry. Mm-hmm. It is okay to feel sad. It is okay to talk about your feelings. But I also feel like now it's a conversation we need to have with them in our own community.
Yes.
Because we're the only ones that's still going with the old myth of like, you shouldn't be crying. Feel like we are the only ones amongst ourselves that needs to change that narrative. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm glad that, like you said, like the world is changing that.
Yeah.
Like you said, they have caught up to that. So I am thankful for that. So now it's time for us amongst ourselves to change that and to catch up with the world.
Yep.
Because the world had to catch up with us. And now we need to catch up with the world because we're still operating on, you know, old traditions and thinking, and everybody else is moving on.
Yes.
So, but I am glad that, you know, the world is finally seeing what we're going through. And then they want to understand it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the cool part is that people who are not of color, they want to understand. And I'm not going to say all of them, but some of them, good majority, they want to understand what we're going through because our issues are completely opposite.
Yes.
And so they want to understand what we're going through and why we're feeling this way and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think my question to you would be just in your personal experience, how do you feel Black men have been expected to handle grief?
I don't feel like we have been expected to handle it at all. I feel like we were expected to just suppress it, to keep it moving, because we always had to be the king of the household, the leader of the household, of the family, and we've always had to be strong, which goes back to the statistics that we talked about earlier, is that, you know, we were expected to be strong all the time. And if you were not being strong, then you were looked at as weak, which is why the slave masters didn't want you if you were showing emotions and you were crying and all this other stuff. And so I think the world now is letting us know it's okay for us to experience grief and to deal with it. But like I said earlier, we just need to change our thinking within our own community. Mm-hmm. And also just let other Black men know that, bro, like, it's okay if you're going through some stuff. It's okay to cry. It's okay to say, I need to go to therapy. It's okay if you're having a down day today. You know what I'm saying? So I think that we need to start putting that message towards each other more often versus like, man, like, quit like crying, dude. Like, it's going to be all right. Like, no, like, let me cry.
Yeah.
Like, let me cry. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't take that away from me. So, but I do think initially the world just said, like, we needed to just be strong and you don't need to handle grief. Just keep it moving. Mm-hmm. So what do you think?
I kind of like what you said. Mm-hmm. So just kind of to piggyback off of you, I think in terms of how we are expected to deal with it, I think that we make that change. But like you said, word of mouth, letting each other know, hey, it's okay to go to mental health. It's okay to, you know, release your problems. It's okay to do these things. I think that vote of support, you know, from somebody that you can confide in or somebody that you can trust, I think goes a long way. So I agree totally with what it is that you said. I just think it's more so letting our network know what's going on and that you can do that.
Yeah.
And I think then it's a trickle down effect. Right?
Absolutely.
Because it goes to their network and then, you know, everybody that's surrounded and connected to us.
Big facts.
Yeah,
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, speaking of that, how do you handle grief?
Man, I'm a praying man. Mm. Like, I literally give everything to God. Like, I seriously give everything to God. I don't make a decision, literally any decision, without consulting and speaking with God. And the way that I converse and speak with God might be different than the way that you converse and speak with God, or the way that our audience converses and speaks with God. So I literally lay my problems on him.
Yeah.
And I'm of the mindset that we're human. Mm-hmm. So we are going to come across situations and hardships, right? Jesus came across situations and hardships.
Absolutely.
So we aren't exempt from that.
Yeah.
But I think when you cast your cares on him and you know, like, hey, it's a little bit rocky right now, but I'll be okay. Right. Yeah. Let's talk through this. Let me get those answers. And usually when that happens for me, and I can only speak for me, it hasn't let me down. It might have been a little bit tough, you know, and rocky, but just always know You can walk on water if you keep your eyes towards God. Don't look at the situation around you.
Yeah.
But just keep your eyes on him. So that's how I handle Greek prayer and speaking to God.
That's what's up. You better take us to church.
Yeah.
You better. Come right ahead. Pass the CLC.
Pass that collection plate around.
Please scan the code.
Right.
On the get that VR hat. That's crazy. Man, as far as, you know, how I handle grief, one, well, I go to therapy.
Yeah.
When I'm experiencing that, and just be to be understanding, grief comes in waves.
Yes.
So you have your times when you may be good to go, and you have your days where you're just like, it's just today is not a good day. Mm-hmm. But no, when I go to therapy, one of my favorite things that I started doing actually during COVID was two things. I learned how to meditate.
Yes.
I'm very big on meditation. It's something that I do. I used to do it before, like in the morning, but I kind of don't now. But I like to do it at night because it's just more relaxing. I like to just take my day and process my thoughts and my feelings, because one thing that I've learned is that we have so much going on through our day that we don't even have the time to think and process. And so when we finally like sit, you would be surprised of the things that would come across your mind that have happened all day that like now you finally have the time to process. And so for me, when I'm going through grief, I like to meditate. I journal. Journaling is the big one. And I just like to journal because I like to look back through my journal entries and just see the growth and see like, man, like a year ago, I was really going through it. But then today, everything is good, you know. But yeah, meditation, journaling, and going to therapy are the biggest ways that I really love to deal with grief. And then, you know, for me, honestly, I ain't gonna lie. When I'm going through grief, I just sit in it. And I don't mean like being depressed, but I allow my body just to like feel it and get it out. Because when you just try to suppress it, when you suppress things like that, it really starts to come out in other ways that you don't imagine. And I've had that happen before, just actually recently. So a friend of mine back in 2019 committed suicide. And so every year around the date in December is something that it just is in my brain. You know what I'm saying? So I can feel my body like tensing up around that time because I know like, huh, the death date is coming. I remember where I was at. I remember what I was doing. I remember who called me. You know, I found out so many things. So my mind remembers that. And so one thing my therapist taught me was that the body remembers trauma. And so even if you're not thinking about it, your body is going to remember it. And so right before my birthday, which was on Thanksgiving, a lot of my friends was like, you real snappy right now. Like, what's going on? Like, the smart comments, like, we used to the smart comments, but now you just throwing jabs, you just doing this, and your attitude is changing and doing that. And so I realized that this year I really didn't process because I thought I was good. I'm like, all right, that was 2019, it's 2025. Like, I kind of dealt with it. In some years, I would be good to go, and then some years I wasn't, and this year I just wasn't. But when you don't deal with it, you start seeing these toxic parts of you that come out in your friendships and your relationships, and now you and your best friend is arguing, or you and your girl or your spouse or whoever is arguing, all because you decided that you didn't want to deal with your grief.
So and you know what, I think that is very important. When my father passed away, I got some of the best advice that I could get, and that advice was feel how you want to feel. If you want to be mad, be mad. If you want to be happy, be happy. If you want to be sad, be sad. If you want to cry, you can cry. Right? Like, you have all of these ranges of emotion, but feel how you need to feel to be able to take care of that.
So yeah, that was just, like I said, something that I felt, and I had to like really have a self-reflection moment. Like, you knew that you wasn't good and you just put that away and you really should have dealt with that. And it just caused, you know, me to have these unnecessary situations where people were really close to me when I really could have just dealt with that. You know what I'm saying? So, but yeah, but just know that grief comes in waves and there are so many ways to deal with it, but you need to be able to deal with it. Otherwise, like I said, it'll come out in ways that you did not imagine, and you will lose some people because you did not decide to deal with that, because everybody's not understanding when it comes to mental health. Some people will be like, I'm sorry you're going through that, but I don't care. You did, or you said X, Y, and Z. And some people will give you grace. But you got some who just won't. So
yes, you do.
You deal with that.
Yes, you do. My question for you would be, because we talked about, you know, how sometimes with grief, you know, you can take it out on different individuals that might be close to you. So how do you feel brotherhood? How does brotherhood play a role with you when it comes to grief?
As far as like brotherhood, just like having a close friend or like, brothers?
Having a close friend, somebody that you can depend on. How do you usually deal with that?
So, you know, I'll be honest with you. The first outside of my biological, you know, brothers and stuff like that, you know, the first real brotherhood I've ever felt was with my therapist.
Wow.
So shout out to Cecil, man. So Cecil is one of the dopest therapists that I know. And going to therapy to talk to him felt just like talking to a big brother. Like, it wasn't the therapist of like, so tell me about your day. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't that formal setting, you know? And I would walk in, he'd be like, oh, what's good, bro? You know what I'm saying? Like, talking to me, like, even, and the thing is, like, even though I know Cecil on a personal level, he didn't know me in this setting of, of him being a therapist and me being a client. So, like, you know, he walking in, he dapping me up. He's asking me, you know, like, how's work? How's this? Who's like, how's that? And like, just for me, that just mattered a lot, because I've never had like a male friend that just really like, I'm going to sit here and listen for an hour. And even and I don't think it was just because he's a therapist. Like, I genuinely feel like he cares, because he reaches out even outside of that and say, hey, you know, I saw you post something on Facebook, like, you're good, you're all right, you know, things like that. And so when I would see him just out in public, he would still just be like, yo, like, you're all right, you're good. So it just felt like, man, this is like my brother. And I go in, he dapped me up. He got his goals in. Shout out to Cecil.
He slugged up.
He would be slugged up in the session. And I'm like, man, like, you like a big bro. Like, so it just felt good. And I would just leave out of therapy just feeling good, because it's an hour to really just put it all out there. But an hour, somebody like giving you good advice and giving you ways to navigate through situations without feeling judged. And I think for me, like I said, it just felt good come out of here, because I knew it was genuine. It felt good. And so, I mean, it would be days I've gone into therapy and I would just be like, I don't even want to talk today. He'd be like, all right, that's cool. I got some work to do anyway. You know what I'm saying? And so now I'm like, all right, it's been 30 minutes. I got something. He's like, I knew you was going to have something to talk about, you know? So yeah, I would just say that was like the first real brotherhood. And it just mattered a lot, because it didn't have that. And this is what I really hate. It didn't have that stigma of like, you know how like when you have a close friend that is like a brother, and you two feel like, I can't say like, I love you, bro, or I care about you, bro. You know what I'm saying? Without people trying to make it weird. Like, it felt good to have like a real genuine brotherhood, and nobody made it like weird. You know? So I think a lot of people are scared to have a male best friend or a male brotherhood. And just to be open about their feelings, because they're like, man, that's gay. Like, we ain't about to talk about that. That's soft. That's women stuff, you know? And it's like, I didn't know that talking about our feelings was like a gender thing. So, you know, so it just felt good to be like authentically me and to just know like he really cared. So that was probably like the first brotherhood that I really experienced. And it's crazy, because to go like all these years without experiencing that was like, man, like, I'm really, well, I'm 36 now, but to be like, man, like, I'm really 34 and never really experienced this before. That's insane. So what about you?
I'm going to be honest with you, man. I come from Jacksonville, Florida, man, the North Side. So, we're used to, we keep our mouths closed. You know, like, we don't do too much talking, because doing a lot of talking can get you in a bad place. So we don't do too much talking, but I will say, my brothers that I have, you know, not just my brother, but my brothers that I consider to be brothers, man. When my father passed away, they really stepped up.
That's what's
like, they really stepped up, and it was really a listening ear for me. So I think that helped. And I will say this, one of the realest people, and I have to give her flowers, one of the realest people, and I know that I was a headache and a pain to deal with, but one of the realest people when that happened was someone by the name of Danielle Reddick, and she like allowed me to feel how I wanted to feel. And I wasn't the best, I wasn't the most pleasant, I didn't do, you know, the best things, but she still was real enough to say, I just want to make sure that I'm here for you, and I'm forever grateful for that. So I have my brothers, but I have one of the realest that I know. that did that for me, and I appreciate that.
That's what's up. That's what's up. Let's give them a hand clap. They deserve it. Let's go. For sure. Shout out to them, man.
For sure.
For sure. Mm-hmm. All right. So our next question is, how do you feel young Black men should be taught how to cope with grief?
I'm always going to say give it to God. Mm-hmm. But I think in addition to that, just being open enough to be able to speak about it, mm-hmm. and not feel like you're going to be judged, not feel like you can't say this, that you can voice your opinions, because if you hold it in and you continue to hold it in, you never know who you're going to blow up on.
That right? Part.
Like it can just explode in the drop of a dime. Yeah. Right. So letting it out, so it doesn't get to that point. Mm-hmm. We want to be more proactive than counterproductive.
Yes.
Yeah. So just like letting it out, like talk about it. Feel how you want to feel. It is okay.
Yeah.
It is okay to feel how you want to feel. And if somebody tells you, you ain't supposed to be feeling like that, I don't think that you need to be associating with that person during that time.
Oh, big facts.
Yeah.
Big facts. Yeah. I think, you know, young Black men should be taught how to deal with grief at an early age.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about, you know, as an adult, I'm talking about early, you know, elementary.
Mm-hmm.
Letting them know that, you know, feelings don't have a gender.
Yes.
You can cry and still be a man.
Mm-hmm.
You can go through grief and still be a man. And it doesn't have to result in you being angry and fighting and violence and cussing somebody out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm such a huge advocate of kids having therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want people to think like therapy is where you go when you're going through something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like going to the doctor. You don't wait until you're unhealthy to go to the doctor.
Yes.
You go to the doctor for a checkup, mm-hmm. you know? And so when you go to therapy, we're going to therapy to get checked in on, you know, mm-hmm. like, hey, how you feeling? You good? Are you okay? You know, instead of being angry, let's show our emotions like this. Instead of fighting, you can do this. You can walk away. You don't have to be in conflict or confrontation and things like that. So I think those things start at a very early age,
mm-hmm.
which is why I talk to, you know, the young Black, you know, men that I work with about, you know, how to calm down your anger. Because if no one teaches you how to deal with your anger or your grief, mm-hmm. or if you are grieving with something and it comes out in anger, you never learn, because then you become an adult and now you're still doing the same thing. But now you have consequences.
Yes.
Because now you could potentially end up in jail. You could potentially harm someone, all because you weren't taught as a kid how to properly handle your emotions when you are going through something.
Mm-hmm.
And so so many, you know, unfortunately, of our young Black men that we deal with, you know, have lost their fathers or mothers and things like that.
Yes.
And they don't know how to grieve. And then what they do, they act up in school, and now they're fighting, and now they're getting kicked out of class, and now they're not going to school. Now they want to get a gun.
Yep.
And that all comes from no one teaching them how to properly grieve.
Yes.
Because now they turn that grief into anger, because now I'm hurting. Now everybody else is going to feel it.
Yep.
So I'm a huge advocate, like I said, of kids being in therapy, not because something needs to be wrong, but let me teach you how to deal with your emotions.
Yes.
So
mm-hmm.
that's just me.
I got you. No, that's a great point. You made the statement that you do a lot of things to help kind of deal with,
mm-hmm.
you know, with mentality, you know, from the therapy to the mm-hmm. meditation. So what does healing look like for you? Right. You've done all of those things.
Yes.
What does healing look like for you?
Man, what does healing look like for me? First mm-hmm. of all, let me tell y'all something. Let me talk into this camera right
talk
here.
Talk to
him. I'm going to tell you right now, healing hurts. It's not going to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to sit in it. And that's honestly what healing looks like to me, is when you're going through that, allowing yourself to sit in it and allowing yourself to process your emotions. Thank you. So I like to, like I said, I will sit in it for a while. Of course, I will make a therapy appointment, and I journal mm-hmm. and I just write it out. One of my biggest things that I do is that when I know that I'm not in the best mood,
mm-hmm.
I do not subject myself around people, because I don't want to bring the bad energy around you.
Yes.
You may have had a great day, and then I decide I'm going to come around you mm-hmm. and mess up your whole day because I'm going through some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe in that. So I usually just pull back. I deal with it. But I just allow myself to sit in it and process it. And I don't mean sit in it like I'm gonna lay in bed all day and I'm gonna just be depressed. I'm gonna just do that. Like for me, it's like really sitting in it and processing like, damn, did that really just happen? Mm-hmm. All right, what's the next step? Okay, how am I feeling right now? Mm-hmm. Do I feel like I'm about to cry? Oh, I think I'm about to cry. Well, let me go ahead and cry. Am I angry? All right, I'm angry. Do I want to go to the gym? Do I want to write it out? Do I want to get on Mud Talk? You know what I'm saying? Just finding those coping skills of how to deal with what you're going through. And I think that was probably like one of the biggest reasons why a lot of people struggled during COVID, mm-hmm. because like a lot of people have to sit and heal. Mm-hmm. You had to really sit and like sit in your thoughts and really just be like, damn, like I've been going through some shit. Yeah. And when COVID happened, there was a lot of emotions and things that I had to really process because we're always on the go all the time. And so when COVID happened, I sat in that shit and I was like, damn, mm-hmm. like you cool? Mm-hmm. Like you need like you. It's time for you to go to therapy, bro. Mm-hmm. And that's honestly how I started going to therapy. Mm. It was just like, just dealing with the passing of my friend that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, my grandfather had passed away the year before that, you know, so it was just like a lot of stuff that you don't think about because you're just going through the day. You just moving and grooving. Mm-hmm. And so when COVID happened and we had to sit at home, I was like, damn, like you need to go see somebody. Like, mm-hmm. how are you dealing with this? How have you been dealing with this? Well, no wonder why you be doing it. You know what I'm saying? So I just sat in it and it does not feel good.
Yeah.
It does not feel good. And if you don't sit in it, you would never heal from it. Mm-hmm. So to all my black men out there, man, it's okay to, you might have to sit at home one night from the club, from the bar and just sit in it.
Yep.
You might need to stop hustling for the day and just be like, hey, I need to make a therapy appointment. Mm-hmm. You might need to just tell your kids and your baby mama today. I just need a day, you know, like, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you don't heal within yourself, then you're not going to be able to heal, you know, the generations that are after you. You just pass the trauma on to your kids.
Yes, sir.
So,
yes, sir.
So what about you? How do you heal?
Well, sort of kind of how you do it. For me, I think it's analyzing the situation, you know, really speaking about the situation, but being analytical and seeing, well, okay, maybe this was why, you know, why I was dealing like this, why I was doing this. Okay, what changes can I make?
Yeah. Right.
If I feel like it's been a day, I do step away from that.
Absolutely.
I'll go and take me a nap. You know, I'll go to the gym. I'm not opposed to taking naps.
Yeah.
I will go and do that so I don't toss that on someone else. And if I feel like I have kind of tossed it on someone else because of what it is that I'm going through, I'll immediately call or text that person.
Okay.
Like, hey, you know what? I was doing this. This is why I was acting like, you know, this is why I was acting like that. So they don't feel offended.
Right.
And I think when that happens, you preserve those relationships because relationships are important.
Absolutely.
So you preserve those relationships. But in addition to that, I think you start getting peace.
Yes.
What I've learned, what works for me is I read my Bible, man. I really read my Bible. And when I feel like it's becoming overwhelming, I pray and give praise, man.
That's all
that I do. And I step away, you know. So if it's at work and I'm like, oh, you know what? This is not it. Mm-hmm. Let me go and take a nap.
Yeah.
Let me go and, you know, think about this. Let me go and watch a TV show, go to the gym, go and do all these things, like how you said.
Yeah.
Just to kind of step away and reflect.
Yes.
And then come back to the situation. Because there's nothing wrong with taking something and putting it down and then coming back to it.
Oh, big facts. Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also, you know, with healing is learning to have healthy coping skills.
Yes.
You know, especially, and of course, this is Dear Black Man, so I can only speak from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. Is learning, like, you know what, I need to put this bottle down.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm going through some shit. But I can't be drinking Don Julio Anejo every day, or I can't be going to the club, or I can't be out here, you know, having sex with Tanisha, Shanisha, Rhonda, and Tanya. All
right, dude.
Okay. I'm just saying, you caught that. Okay. You know, just.
Man, I had the ice cream parlor.
Yeah, hello, man. Yeah, every flavor. Call you Baskin Robbins. 32 flavors. But just having those healthy coping skills that we need as black men.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because when you don't heal, then you find yourselves with these unhealthy coping skills that just messes everybody else up.
For real.
I mean, it messes everybody up. I mean, you can say, today I'm grieving and I'm going to give me a bottle of Don Julio. And now you done got into a fight with somebody. Facts. You done got pulled over for a DUI. Yeah. You done called somebody and said something crazy. Or you decided, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and sleep with Tanisha and Shanisha and Rhonda. And now you at the clinic. You know what I'm saying? So, mm-hmm. I mean, because you have not learned how to properly grieve. And so you have messed up everybody's life. And so we have to, as Black men, we have to learn those healthy coping skills and know that therapy is important. Church is important. Journaling is important. Going to the gym is important. All of those things are great ways to help you deal with grief, you know? Yep. And like you said, when you find yourself doing that, put that stuff down and go do something. Mm-hmm. So get off Facebook and go do something. Get off Hulu and go do something. Get off that Xbox and go do something, you know? So go do something. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, when did you recognize as a Black man that you were experiencing grief and how did this impact you?
I recognized that I was experiencing grief when I'm just going to piggyback off of what you said. Those everybody has vices, mm-hmm. right? Everybody has it. And when I noticed an uptick in my vices, mm-hmm. right? Like, whether it's the drinking going up, right?
Yeah.
You know, smoke, what, all of that,
yeah.
right? Like, just an uptick. And I'm like, I don't feel good.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you look in the mirror, you like, nah, this not me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not looking the same. I'm not acting the same. It was just like those different upticks mm-hmm. In me, or even my, you know, personality. Like, you know, I'm going to smile. I'm going to do all of these different things. But, you know, just sometimes being, you know, chippy or, you know, not showing love like how I normally would show love, and being cognizant of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is when I recognized that I was experiencing grief, because grief affects different people in different ways. Right.
Facts.
Like you and I can be going through the same situation. Mm-hmm. Right. But the way that I grieve is going to be different than the way that you grieve. But we all share that same experience and it hurts us both.
Yes.
Right. So I noticed that. And then it was like, all right, I need to kind of take action mm-hmm. with this, because I don't want to keep feeling like this. I don't normally feel like this.
Yeah.
What is it that I need to do to stop feeling like this?
Gotcha.
So it was recognizing those things and then putting something in place, like who I can speak to, you know, what are the things that I can do to alleviate this, mm-hmm. you know, because it doesn't all happen in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
Right. It's not a one-time thing. Like, this is an ongoing thing.
Yes.
So what are the different things that I can do to make sure that I'm good in that?
Facts.
I
would say that, you know, I recognized I was experiencing grief. My attitude started changing.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the way that I was treating people around me wasn't okay.
Yeah.
And you know, people were like checking me about it. And I was like, man, I ain't did nothing to you. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And you not recognizing that your grief and you not dealing with it is impacting your relationships and friendships.
Yes.
And so a friend and I, well, we used to be friends. We're not as much now. Mm-hmm. But at that time, we were very close. Him and I had a blow up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm talking about, like, we was out to dinner with some friends and I like packed him up. I packed him up.
He was the doggy bag.
Yes. He was in the take home box for sure.
I'm not laughing.
Yeah, no. No, but I'm saying I packed him up. And man, and it was bad, because him and I had been friends for a long time, like since high school. And that it was around the time that my grandfather had passed.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that situation. And then, of course, when my friend passed away in 2019, and just again, that attitude again. And I was just like, I don't feel myself.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not this angry person mm-hmm. that's coming off and cussing people out mm-hmm. and just talking to people crazy. And I was like, something going on. Something is happening. And after that blow up happened, I was really depressed. Like, once I went home and sat in that for a minute, mm-hmm. I was very, like, I was just so depressed and sad within myself and disappointed, because now I have to not only deal with grief, but now I got to deal with all the after effect that mm-hmm. happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up hitting up Jasmine Pope, who's another amazing therapist. Mm-hmm. She was the first therapist I went to, and I was like, look, I need to come talk to you. Like, something is going on. And, you know, once I got with her and she just taught me everything about grief, like, it comes in waves. And, you know, here's your coping skills. This is what you can do, how you can recognize you're going through grief. Like, there was some, the word grief never even crossed my mind. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And just to know, like, you know, there are healthy ways to deal with grief was so important, because I couldn't keep just being angry and going off on people. Like, I mean, it was to the point I was waking up angry. Like, all right, who's gonna catch it today? You know what I'm saying? I was just like, this is not me. And if anybody knows me, they know I love to have fun. Mm-hmm. I'm a happy person. I try to be positive. And so coming off as angry and all this thuggish, ruggish bone energy that everybody was getting, I was just like, yeah, this is not cool. Yeah. It wasn't okay. So that was like the first time where I really was like, all right, this grief thing, like, this is for real.
Yeah,
this is for real. And so I'm just thankful that I learned those coping skills, because now I can tell people like, hey, like, I'm really not having a good day today. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, just kind of going through some things today, or this is this person's death date that passed. So I'm kind of like, want to be by myself, whatever case may be. But then I also learned just like how to, like you said, be proactive when you know that it's coming. Like, oh, shoot. Because you can feel it.
Yeah.
You can feel when the grief is coming. I don't know what the feeling is, but when you feel it, you like, oh, yeah, here it comes. And so now you have to put in your mind like, all right, I know what's coming. So let me just be proactive. Even if you don't feel it and you know that specific date is coming up, you can be proactive and say like, shoot, like, I know, like, for December 4th, you know what I'm saying, it's coming up. So what it passed. But when it's coming up, I would say like, all right, December 4th is coming up. Let me just go ahead and just prep myself. Let me go for a walk, or let me go to the gym. Let me, you know, maybe I want to hang out with friends this day. Just try to keep my mind busy. But then also know too, like, don't run from it.
Yeah.
I mean, deal with it. I mean, because eventually it's going to, it doesn't have to be on a specific date. It can just catch you out of nowhere.
Yes, it can.
It can be a smell that you smell that could have been your grandmama's favorite perfume that she wore every day. You like, damn.
Yeah,
I was at Macy's and smelled that perfume. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I know for me, like, when my mom cooks roast, my grandmother loved cooking roast. We ate roast a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, roast for me, I'd be like, oh, shoot, we having roast today.
Yeah.
Here we go. You know what I'm saying? So it can be anything. And sometimes it can just be a random trigger, and it just, you never know. Yes. So, but yeah, that was the first time that I realized. I was like, man, this grief shit is real.
It's a real thing, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Son, you got any more questions for us?
I got one more for you.
All right.
What does peace look like for you?
Outside of silence. You know, peace is really just being happy within yourself. I knew I was at peace when I just didn't feel angry anymore waking up in the morning. Just being able to wake up and like, you know what? Thank you, God. And your mind just feels clear. It doesn't, you didn't wake up and you're angry because you got this going on. You feeling like this or whatnot. Peace just feels, it feels great. It feels amazing. And if I can wake up and put my 2 feet on the floor and say, thank you, Lord, for everything you've done, then I'm very thankful for that. But yeah, peace is just being at peace within yourself, being happy. And I think, and also having good relationships with people. Because I hate confrontation. I mean, I'll confront it if it needs to be confronted. But for the most part, I try to avoid confrontation. And that's why, like, I love having good relationships and friendships with people, because I hate confrontation. I hate drama. So, and I don't want that in my life, because I already got enough stuff going on. So especially if I'm dealing with grief and I got to deal with all this other stuff going on, like, I don't have time for that. And so, yeah, peace is just making sure I'm just good with my family, my friends, my Mud Talk family, you know what I'm saying? All of that. And if I can go about my day and say, you know what, today was a good day.
Yeah.
I feel like that's peaceful. But waking up every day angry at the world because you lost family members and they didn't have anything to do with that. That's not peaceful.
Yeah.
That's not okay. So what about you?
I would say, man, if I could bottle peace up in a can, sell it, I would. And I think that looks like just being happy, man, being happy. Like you said, preserving those relationships around you, everybody that's connected to you is feeling, you know, is feeling good. And being able to know, like, hey, whatever is going on, right? Whatever it is that I'm dealing with, mm-hmm. I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's going to be okay. No matter how rough, no matter how rocky it gets, it's going to be okay. And I truly, genuinely feel like it's going to be okay.
Absolutely. You know,
so I think it's happiness inside and outside for me.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, before we go into our final segment of the show, CL Styles, do you have any advice for any Black man who may be listening and is currently experiencing grief?
Don't be afraid to feel how you want to feel. It is okay. It is a judgment-free zone. And if you can do that, right? If you can voice your opinions, because this is the thing about grief too. It's almost like when you're going through it, and I know you and I alluded to it, you don't really know that you're going through it. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a baby that's crying, right? And the baby knows exactly what it is that they want.
Yes.
And they're saying, hey, I want this, but the parent doesn't know because the baby's crying and they're trying to go and grab this and grab and grab that,
yeah.
Right? So it's grief, and sometimes we don't know how to express it, but I think it's okay to whatever it is that you're feeling, even if it sounds like it's the craziest thing in the world, put it down on paper and say it and try and piece through it.
Yeah.
Try and piece through it, right? Because that's the only way that you are going to feel better about the situation. And don't let anyone tell you that you can't feel the way that you are feeling about the situation.
Let's go. I know that's right.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
What about you?
I would say, number one, if you are not feeling well, it's okay to get help. Therapy is very important. Don't let anybody tell you different. Don't let nobody tell you that you are less of a man if you go and get help. Don't let anybody tell you less of a man for crying. Don't let anybody tell you less of a man for expressing your feelings. Men, if you have a brotherhood, it's okay to tell your brother, I love you, I care about you, to check on them. Two words can save somebody's life. You okay?
Yep.
It takes a quick text, you know, and I think that's one thing that I appreciate about us on Mud Talk, that we're always checking in and just saying, you good? Are you okay? What's up? You know, can we do anything to help? And so just know that it is okay to go get help, and know that it doesn't make you any less of a man to go and do that. I mean, if you had a headache for a week, you will eventually go to the doctor to figure out what's going on, right? Yes. So it's the same thing. If you have something going on with you, go and get therapy. You don't wait until you have a headache and your brains are spewing out on the floor to be like, I probably should go to the doctor. It's the same thing with mental health. You don't wait until something bad happens. You say, you know what? I probably should go and get some help. You know within yourself that something is bothering you and you should go get help. And don't allow what society says or the stigma or whatever is out there to say men don't need therapy, because we do. We deal with things just like anybody else, especially Black men. I mean, we deal with gun violence. We deal with racism. We deal with high jail rates and, you know, racial profiling. I mean, we deal with a lot as Black men, and we are just expect to just like take it and not have any impact to us, when in fact we do.
Yes.
So I think it's extremely important to make sure that we are handling our grief properly, so that we aren't making an unhealthy choice that could ultimately change somebody's life or your life. So go get help. If y'all need therapy, man, we have plenty of resources here at Mud Talk where you can go and, you know, shoot us an email or an inbox, and we will send you a list of amazing therapists that are out there, not just in the city of Toledo, but worldwide.
Yes.
There are a bunch of amazing resources that you can Google that have, you know, telehealth services, virtual services. The way that our technology is set up now, you can literally get a therapist that's all the way in Australia.
Yep.
And you can FaceTime or Google Me or whatever you can use on your phone. But it's okay to go get help. And if, like you said, if you are not around people that allow you to express yourself and your feelings, and they look at you differently for that, get away from them people.
Run.
Get away from them. Because they do not have your best interests at heart. They do not care about your mental health. They don't care about you, period. And so, you know, I love being in spaces where we can have conversations like this and we can talk about it. And I can say, I'm going through this, so I'm dealing with this. If you don't have those kind of people in your life, find you some new people.
Yes.
Ain't nothing worse than having people in your circle that don't care about you.
Right.
If they don't check, especially like if they know that you're going through something and they don't check on you, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, we're in the age of social media. You know, people will post on Facebook and say, like, I mean, they'll post how they feel, like, damn, today was a death date of such and such and such. I'm going through it. And if your friends see that on their timeline and it don't text you,
yeah,
that's insane. Get away from them people. Because
yep.
I'm just amazed at the people that post stuff and then they just keep scrolling.
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
yeah,
ain't this your people?
Yeah.
Like, y'all was just on social media, like, turning the bottles up.
Yep.
Spread money at the club. You know what I'm saying? But then they over here talking about they about to jump off the high-level bridge and you just keep on scrolling.
Yeah.
Get away from them people.
Run.
Please run as fast as you can. Run mm-hmm. to therapy. That would be great. And, you know, and I also tell people, too, especially, and this doesn't even just go for black men, but just in general. If you can tell Facebook your business for free, you can tell a therapist.
I like that.
That's all I got to say. Because like people that. On Facebook ain't going to help you. Mm-hmm. They ain't going to help you. Nope. You go to that therapist. That's 1 hour of your own time that you get to yourself. You know what's the best part about it? The people on Facebook, they're going to tell all your business. But that therapist, they can't tell your business legally. They will legally get in trouble.
They won't let me out.
They won't let you out because they are going to jail. So that's why I love my therapist, man.
Yeah.
He got some secrets mm-hmm. that he is going to take to the grave. And he ain't got no choice but to.
He better.
Because you're going to jail, buddy. You are going to go to jail. But in all seriousness, though, y'all, man, go ahead. It's okay. Therapy is great. Therapy is amazing. My black men, my brothers, please go ahead. You know, get an amazing therapist. And it's okay if you have to change therapists. If you got to keep going and until you find the right one, it's okay. I went through two mm-hmm. before I found the one that I got now. And I absolutely love it, you know, and it's okay to if you have to switch up your therapist. So.
Sure.
Well, we thank y'all for this amazing conversation and the questions that you guys sent in. Our next show is March 7th. That's a pretty big show that we're going to have. We're going to have Cassandra McPherson and Sean Mahone on the show because they are, well, Sean Mahone is running for mayor of the city of Toledo.
Mm-hmm.
And Cassandra McPherson is running for reelection for city council.
Yes.
So that's going to be major.
Tune in.
Make sure y'all tune in live March 7th at 8 p.m.
Yep.
We thank you guys for tuning in and tapping in with us here on Mud Talk. Before we wrap this up in the show, just know, like we said, if you need any mental health services, man, please don't be afraid to reach out here on Mud Talk. We have a plethora of services. Shout out to our amazing co-host, Miss Amy, who's an amazing just what she does, period, when it comes to mental health. So
I love you, Amy.
We love you so much. So please reach out to her or to us in general. And with that, we were able to have a special interview earlier this week. We met with an amazing lady named Safana Harris, who stopped by the show, and she was able to share her story about her son, Isaiah. Over the summer, Isaiah was shot and killed during the nighttime. And so she was able to share his story and her story about how it impacted not just her family, but how her youngest son, Josiah, is dealing with grieving as well as her grandkids. And so make sure y'all listen to her story. It's an amazing story about how she just has persevered and just continues to just be a voice in the community, but really just how strong her family is. So we thank you guys for tuning to Mud Talk, and make sure you check out right now our interview with Safana Harris. Have a good night. Black men, an honest conversation about black men and grief. And today we have a special guest that is joining us for a very important topic. Miss Amy, who do we have today?
On September 14th, 2024, Safana Harris's life changed forever when her 28-year-old son Isaiah was shot and killed outside of a restaurant at the intersection of Detroit and Buckingham when shots were fired into a crowd. Isaiah was a husband, a father, a son, a brother, nephew, cousin, and a friend to many. Today, Safana is here to speak with us about her experience with the loss of her son, her grieving process, and to share a very important message to our young people in the community. Thank you, Safana, for coming today and talking with us.
Yes.
We first want to start off by telling you that we're very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
And we appreciate you for coming and talking to us about everything you've experienced. as a mother, I cannot imagine what you've gone through. And so I do appreciate you coming and talking with us about that. So I want to start off and just tell us a little bit about your son. Who was he? What did he love? What made him special?
Webby.
Webby. Start calling Webby.
That's what everybody knows him as, Webby. I know him as Zay. Okay. You know, but he was dapper. He always dressed, you know, he thought he was the next best thing to sweet potato pie. You know? he was definitely a comedian. He was a leader. he was hard-headed. But the one thing I can say about my son is that he loved his family, you know, and it was a great loss. Yeah. And the one thing, the first thing that I learned about him was the fact that there were parts of him that I did not know. I didn't know about. And I learned that at his funeral because there was no standing room inside the church in the parking lot. So there were very many lives that he touched that I did not even know. In fact, I still have people reaching out to me, you know, people that he was in jail with, people that live in Cincinnati, Cleveland. They're still reaching out to me, you know, so it's like it's still going on. The funeral is still going on, you know, and it just amazes me. It amazes me that something so great came out of me. You know?
So how has your life changed since his passing? What are some of the hardest moments that you faced?
Right now, the hardest moments is every time we go to court. Every time we go to pre-trial, it's a trigger. It physically affects me. Like literally, I get dizzy. I get nauseous. I get lightheaded. I have to step away. I have to sit down, you know, because the one thing that I have noticed in this process is that the two young men, they're smiling. They're dapping up other inmates that they know. Even the one young man, the shooter, I don't even know what happened this particular day, but I felt like, you know, maybe they thought we were nitpicking or something. And I'm like, you know, it's just sad that as women that have two sons, yours is alive and mine is gone, but they're still, we're still both suffering a loss, you know, and it's really sad, but I thank God because I have a great support system that has really helped me to navigate through this because I was suicidal. I was suicidal. And the people that really have showed up for me, words can't even express my gratitude towards them because I wanted to jump off of a bridge, like literally. I really did with everything in me, but somehow God just made a way. Somebody pops up, somebody calls, get dressed, I'm on the way. And, you know, they were a pleasant distraction, you know, through that initial time of losing Webby. And I'm grateful for that. Because, I mean, you know, when we wake up, we don't think this is going to be our last day. You know, and as a mom, that's the one phone call you don't ever want to get.
Yeah, you know? Emotional over here as a mom.
You don't ever want to get that call. Because I literally felt like the wind was knocked out of me. Because, you know, when it happened, his wife called me. His wife was right there. So I'm listening to all of this in the background, and I'm listening to her yelling and screaming. And then it goes silent. Because the reality hit me that she just told me my son was shot and killed. I was stuck. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. Thankfully, my daughter, my oldest daughter, Frances, was with me. But, you know, it's been a journey. It's been an experience.
And now, so you have a younger son, Josiah.
Yes.
How is he coping and dealing with this as far as grief?
So when you know Chachi, you know that he's an artist. Mm. So the first thing he did was call home. And the second thing that he did was he hit the studio. And I don't know if you've heard the song that he did at the funeral. There's a video, Save Me a Prayer. That was actual footage of the funeral and everything going on. And that's my church. I belong to that church that the funeral and the video was held at. And it's like he lost his father. Because his big brother was like a father figure. So, and I'm pretty sure he smoked a lot of weed, you know. And he told me, don't ask me to go to court because I can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of the things that he said to me. Don't ask me to go to court. But he has poured his energy into his music. And he released his, I don't know what you call it, album?
EP album.
EP album.
Yeah, he released it, and it's called My Testimony. And it's out on all streaming networks, Spotify, YouTube, all of that. Yeah, MTV. No, I'm just joking.
Hey, we're speaking. Yep, we're speaking into his business. Don't forget about us little people there, Chachi.
Come on, Chachi.
Definitely.
Come on the mud.
Yes. Definitely. Okay.
Absolutely.
I talked to him this morning. I said, you remember how you used to call me? You used to tell me, Mom, Quavo called me this morning and he want to fly me to Atlanta. I said, well, you better go. We got money to make.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. So since this happened, what are some things that have been helpful for you in coping with his loss, either through things people have said or done for you, or is there any outlets that you've used for your
grief? I definitely use prayer. Prayer has been the foundation of everything. And I would say even more now, because, I go back and forth, you know, with fighting depression, I go back and forth with the thoughts. I go back and forth with retaliation. I go back and forth, like, is life worth living at this point? And then my children remind me every day, you got us, you got your grandbabies, my friends, my family. They have all been there to kind of help me sort through it. And we've all helped each other sort through it, you know. But I have a very artistic bunch of kids.
Yeah.
You know, they're all creative. And they find ways to release that in doing something.
Yeah.
You know, so I do thank God for that. Another thing is I have a prayer team that I started a year ago, an intercessory prayer. And so the prayer team has been essential. You know, they showed up, they came to see me, they pulled me out, had me meet them for breakfast. You know, they called me, my church family, they showed up in a way that I didn't know a church family could. TRP, I want to give you a shout out, the Refreshing Place. 2500 Nebraska Avenue, Bishop Christopher Rao in the house. Yes. But I've never had a ministry show up for me the way that they did. Because mind you, I've buried my mom there and now my son. So yeah, they showed up for me and I'm forever grateful to them for that. Forever grateful.
Absolutely.
I mean, like I couldn't have asked for a better place to be, honestly. Yeah.
So as you're kind of going through your day-to-day life, what are some things that you do to help keep Webby's memory alive?
I'm always posting his pictures. I'm always making video reels. I'm doing things that I know he would want to see done, you know, with the grandkids, you know, because he had about, he got more kids than all of my kids. So, you know, we're trying to get them, you know, we're spending time with them. We're calling them. We're reaching out. You know, we were all together for the holiday season. So it really just made it feel like, you know, home and family and that connection, because I see my son and all of his children, you know, and if you've ever seen them, it's like amazing. It's amazing. He got some strong genes, for real. But I see my son and all of his children, and that's the one thing that we do. We always come together, you know, no matter what it is, you know, and I thank my daughters for that because they're always going to get them, you know, the niece, the nephews, I'm calling, you know, because I don't move around as much as I used to.
Yeah.
But we, you know, we keep his pictures out.
Yeah.
We keep them out all the time. They don't get put up. When they come in the house, they see their dad, you know, and I think that is important for them to know that their dad, even if he's not there, he's there.
There, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's only so much I can do.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that song, Save Me a Prayer, all my grandkids know that song from beginning to end. And they're all in the video.
Okay.
So yeah, that's definitely been hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's a great way to honor him and, you know, in seeing all of the kids through that.
Yeah, it really is. Cause like they were all dressed up and, you know, everybody had on red suits and even the kids, they were all looking so nice. My grandsons looked like little men, you know, and they just walked around looking with their head high and, you know, I don't think they understand yet, but as they grow, that's going to be my concern.
Yeah.
That's a great concern for me.
Yeah.
Their father not being here as becoming young men, because young men need their dads.
Absolutely.
And I always tell my children, your dad might have not have been the best dad, but his presence still makes a difference. I don't care how bad of a dad you thought he was. When he walked in the house, everybody straightened up. You know, and I tell these mothers, y'all doing the wrong thing, keeping these dads from the kids. You know what I'm saying? Because these young men are going to grow up. And my boys told me, you'll never understand. You're not a boy, you a girl. And they're right. They are right. Because there's certain things I would never get as a woman.
Right.
You know, from my sons. It's certain conversations they won't even have around me.
Right. Because you're mom.
Exactly. Yeah. And because I'm a girl.
Because you're a girl.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I really push that. I push that with my kids, my daughters especially. Let the men see their sons.
Yes.
Let them. Let those men see their daughters.
Yes.
Let them. I don't care if it's for 5 minutes. Kids need that.
Absolutely.
That balance, you know. But yeah.
Yeah. Now, how are their little ones handling the grieving process with everything?
So, like, my youngest granddaughter, she was over the other day. And there's a photo of me and her dad. And you see it as soon as you walk in. And she said, that's my daddy. But she said it the whole night. So she's registering something, you know. I can't really say what the boys are really doing, but they always say, can we come over to my daughter, Destiny? Can we come over? Can we come over? You know, can you come get us? Because that's how they associate their dad, you know, with all of us being together. So I think that's a part of their process.
Helps feel closer.
So.
So gun violence has been a very big topic in Toledo. It is something that's been all over. What message do you want to share with young people who are in the community? Maybe they're witnessing the gun violence, or maybe they're a part of that. Gun violence in our community. What message do you have?
Dare to be different. Dare to be different. Because the young man that drove Deontay, Keenan was the driver, Deontay was the shooter. If Keenan would have said, no, man, you got to do that without me, my son would be alive today. But instead, he joined in. And he drove that young man to what was going to be both of their demise. You see what I'm saying? If he would have just took a stance like, nope, I'm gonna have to, you know, bow out on this one. You got to do that on your own.
Yeah.
You know, and instead he encouraged it. He encouraged the behavior. He encouraged the mindset, you know, and the Bible talks about that. Can two walk together except they be in agreement? So you were in agreement with taking somebody's life.
Yeah.
And in my eyes, you're just as guilty as the shooter.
Yeah.
Because you agreed to participate in the behavior. And it's like, not knowing these young men personally, I know that the shooter's dad was shot and killed to gun violence. So as a young Black man in the community, what OG scooped that boy up and helped him process the fact that he lost his dad?
Yeah.
Who helped him to sort through that? You know what I'm saying? And this is where I hold the men responsible and accountable, because as men, we teach young men how to behave.
Yeah.
So who were the examples in his life? And then as mothers, you question yourself. Because see, they're an extension of me.
Yeah.
My children are an extension of me. And when my son died, I told my kids this. I said, you better act like you're the first family. I said, because your life is an open book right now.
Yeah.
Act like you are the president's daughter.
Yeah.
Because everything you do is being watched. Be on your best behavior. Don't go anywhere looking crazy. Keep your hair done. Okay?
Yeah.
Because we the first family right now.
Yeah.
And we were.
Yeah.
You know, when we did that balloon release,
mm-hmm.
it went viral. Over 20,000 views. That wasn't my goal, but the message,
mm-hmm.
the message, it affected more than the immediate people on the block.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So, yeah, it changes your perspective,
mm-hmm.
because now I'm looking at kids like, hey, come on out that street. Come on over here. What's your name? You know, I'm trying to be more aware and conscious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't let my grandsons play with guns.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And when they do, I take them.
Yeah.
And I tell their moms, don't let them do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're teaching them already.
Yeah.
You're desensitizing them to holding a gun. Guns are for protection. You know, they're meant to be used in a proper way.
Yes.
You know. But that's not our culture right now.
Yeah.
It's not our culture.
Yeah.
You know, it's to do whatever else, you know, people want to do. And it starts at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It starts at home. I don't care what nobody say. It starts at home. You know, Isaiah, he got his first charge at 11. Mm-hmm. Me and his dad were divorcing. He caught his first charge at 11, but they couldn't keep him because he was too young.
Mm.
But he was hurting,
yeah,
because his dad was gone. And at that moment, I had to make decisions, and I had to make them quick, mm-hmm. because now he even got a taste of the street life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a problem. I'm not going to say Isaiah was an angel, because he wasn't an angel. He had to grow out of a lot of his thinking and his behavior,
yeah.
you know. But 11, he caught his first charge. He was the lookout kid.
Mm-hmm.
By 15, he was carrying a pistol, and he was the dope man. You know what I'm saying? But somewhere in all of that madness of him growing up and me instilling in him values and instilling in him having a relationship with God, something changed. And I know that that was the power of prayer.
Absolutely.
You know, because that was one thing. They had to go to church. Mm-hmm. Sunday, you already knew we was at church all day. If your friends spent the night, they had They're to go to church too. If they don't want to go to church, they can't come over.
Yeah.
And my kids already knew that. And I have their adult friends today. Like, I remember when we was at a New Year's Eve service with you singing in the choir.
Because they couldn't come over without that.
Exactly. And they all wanted to be together.
Yes. Yeah.
But I thank God, because somewhere in all of that he was going through in his growing pains, it did something.
Yeah.
And he changed. And he never went back to jail.
Yeah.
He never went back. Yeah. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
He did grow up.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. He did.
So what do you want to say to, you know, Black men who are currently going through the grieving process of, you know, losing a family member, whether it's, you know, to gun violence or just natural cause or anything like that? What do you want to say to Black men who are going through the grieving process right now?
You need a village. You got to have a village. You got to have a village because an idle mind is the devil's workshop. It really is. All you got to do is get by yourself and alone with your thoughts. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? And before you know it, it done took you places you never intended to be. Because the grief can, it can be so overwhelming. It'll be louder than any voice if we're not careful. We need a village. We need an accountability partner. We need somebody to check on us. But we also have to be an active participant in that process.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of Black men just feel like if they express themselves, then that means that they weak, you know, or whatever. But no, it doesn't mean that you're weak. It means that you don't want to do nothing stupid.
Yes.
And you have to be vulnerable at some point, especially if you're going to go through the process of healing.
Yeah.
Because that process, you have to be candid, and sometimes it don't look good and you're gonna cry. But it don't make you less of a man, you know. It makes you stronger, honestly, because now you can communicate exactly what you're feeling. But you need a village.
Yes, you
got to have a village. It is necessary. It is of great importance. It will be the difference between life and death. It'll be the difference between being free and being in a joint. So you need a village. Yes. off the jump. You got to have that circle.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the word right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you talked about what you would recommend for any Black mother during the grieving process. Mm-hmm. What are some words that you can give to any other mothers that are in your spot where they're grieving because they have a loss of a child?
I can only give them what I got. Number one, have a relationship with God or whatever your faith is. You know, you have to take that time to meditate and to pray, to get in your Bible. Another thing is you've got to find the things that fulfill you as a woman. Be present when it comes to your children. Because grief looks different in everybody.
Yes.
And we can't be so caught up in grief that we're not aware of our surroundings when it comes to our immediate household. Because some of my kids, they was drinking and smoking. Some of them was sipping lean, you know, and all these things because they don't know how to communicate and express themselves. You have to have the outlet to express yourself so that you can get that release that you need so that that healing process can begin. Another thing is take time to breathe. You got to breathe. You got to be still and just breathe. You'd be surprised what breathing can do for you.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying, like, we can work ourselves up to a point where we won't eat, we won't sleep, we'll get sick at the stomach. Breathe. Even God rested on the seventh day. So understand that rest is essential. It's important. It's going to help you get through these rough patches because every day doesn't look the same with grief. It does not look the same. Everybody's grief doesn't look the same. People grieve longer than others. Some people grieve shorter than others. Some people just want to get through it, you know. But we can't tell people how to grieve.
Yeah.
But the grieving process will irritate people is what I'm learning.
Yeah.
People will get irritated because they're like, you still dealing with that?
Mm-hmm. And you're like, yes.
You
yes.
still crying?
Absolutely.
It's been 2 years. Yeah. You still crying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying. Because until you walk through those shoes, you can never understand what I'm dealing with. Absolutely. You can't even grace the surface of that. Because it's like a part of you have died. And you can't never get that back.
Yeah.
You know, you can't get it back. So we have to find ways to heal, whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
Some people draw, some people do hair. For me, it was prayer. You know, it's me doing things like this. It's me getting on Facebook and preaching and encouraging people in the word. You know, this is where I get my fulfillment from, you know, because I read a post on Facebook a couple of weeks ago. Don't leave earth having let everybody use you but God.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
It spoke volumes to me.
Yeah.
And it definitely helped me get in a place like, what's really important here?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? What's really important? Because I've been used by so many people, but I've never really given myself to really give God the opportunity to be who he needs to be in my life. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what, God? I don't got nothing else to lose. Yeah. So let me try you, you know. Let me try my relationship with you.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm glad I did it. Yeah. I'm glad. Definitely glad.
Yes.
Absolutely. How do you want your son to be remembered?
Everybody that knows Webby, they knows this laugh he has. Mm-hmm. He always has a laugh. And when he started laughing, everybody starts laughing.
This is the best kind of laugh.
You know, it's a contagious laugh. Yes. It's a laugh that tickles you. Like, what you laughing at? Like, what's so funny?
And you're laughing. You don't even know why you're laughing.
But he got you laughing. You know, I want people to remember the laughter. I want people to remember that he was the person that always wanted everybody together.
Yes.
The good thing that I am happy about is before all of this happened, he had his 28th birthday. And that was the first time that he and his siblings had all been together at one time.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
You can't pay for that.
Yeah.
Can't pay for that. But my children, they go back to that. Like, we had a blast. They had a party bus, you know. But Isaiah was one. He wanted everybody to enjoy themselves. He would pay for everybody. He wanted you to be a part of it. He wanted to make those memories. Nobody was better than nobody when it came to them.
Yeah.
Everybody was equal.
Yeah.
And everybody felt equal.
Yeah.
And everybody felt like family.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
When you met him, he gonna always dap you up. He always made you feel accepted. And that's what I want people to remember about him.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And the full funeral that you talked about, it shows that exactly what you just said.
It
was wall to wall and every single person was there because he made them feel important.
Yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He had a good, he was great at that.
Yeah. That's great. And there's that laugh too. It's got everybody laughing and having a good time.
Right,
I
right.
love that. So as you continue on your healing journey, what is one thing that gives you hope?
Looking at my grandchildren. Because I definitely want the cycle to end, you know. They give me hope because he left behind his seed. So we have another chance to make things right.
Yeah.
Be the example, be present, be an active part of their growing up and their process and becoming young men and young women. I have hope that, you know, in my children, because they're young parents, you know, and no, they don't always get it right. I didn't always get it right. But when they get in those, you know, fickles and those pickles, they always come to me like, Mom, guess what? This happened. What do you think about that? How did you deal with that? you know, and the one thing I tell them is you have to have an open communication with your kids.
Yes.
That is the one thing that I pride myself on with my kids. We were able to talk about everything, sex, sexuality, friends, adults, and they did not feel like they were being judged.
Yes.
So we talked about their virginity. We talked about like the things that boys go through. We talked about birth control and we talked about it openly.
Yeah.
Because I listened and I didn't judge.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes
I didn't judge. Yeah. And it made them, I created an atmosphere for them to trust me. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, they didn't go through a lot of things other kids went through.
Yeah.
That were immediately around them. Mm-hmm. They dodged a lot of that because they could talk to me.
Yeah.
And their friends did too, to be honest.
Yeah.
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 If I had to pick a parenting tip, that's always my number one. Be open and don't judge.
Yes. Yeah.
Even though you want to. As a parent, sometimes you want to be like, ugh.
Yeah.
But if you don't, they're going to come to you and they're going to come to you every single time.
Yeah.
And I love that.
We listen and we don't judge. It's like the best thing ever created on social
media.
I believe so.
One of the most positive things. I completely agree.
I find myself sending to kids all the time, like, I listen and I don't judge.
As long as you're really not judging.
I'm not judging.
Not
out loud.
Right. Yeah. Although your face.
Not out loud.
Not out loud. But you know what? Even as a parent, sometimes you might have to sit there and listen. Yes. And you in your head are going, that is not the right choice.
Yeah, you need a mouthpiece because your teeth are grinding.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Like, ooh.
Yes.
But yeah, we didn't have that. We don't have a judgment zone in our household, in our relationships. Even today, my kids talk to me openly and I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Why are you telling me this? Like, I really don't want to know, yeah. But okay.
I feel the same way. My kids do that. I'm like, oh,
all right.
I didn't need to know all that.
Mama, I need you to listen, okay?
Yep.
I don't want to hear this, but okay,
I feel that.
It's crazy, but yeah.
That is a great parenting tip, though.
Absolutely. Now, if anyone wants to come out and have you do any speaking engagements or anything like that, how can they get in contact with you?
So you can always reach me on Facebook. My name is Stefana Harris. On Instagram, I am SHarris43. I just changed my TikTok to Stefana H. On Facebook, my son is my picture and my family's behind it. But everything I do pretty much seems to go viral. when it comes to Facebook for some reason. So, you know, there's always a way. And it's been interesting because the last couple of weeks I've been running into people that have been at my son's funeral. And, you know, like I just met a lady who just joined my prayer group. Okay. And she said, I've been praying to meet you.
Wow.
I said, huh? She introduced herself. We were at Five Below. Mm-hmm. And I was standing there. She was standing at the door. She looked at me. She said, I've been praying to meet you. And I'm looking and I'm like, okay, who are you? She introduced herself and she said, I was at your son's funeral and I was at your son's repast.
Wow.
I didn't know. I was in another world.
Yeah.
But she was there through it all. And she said, I've been wanting to meet you. And now we're connected. Yeah. I met another friend of mine I haven't seen in years. Now we're reconnected.
Yeah.
You know, and so losing my son has reconnected me with a lot of people, all his childhood friends. But somebody that knows somebody can always reach me.
Absolutely.
Definitely. They can always reach me.
Okay. Is there any last messages that you want to put out there? Anything else that you want to share that you think a community needs to hear?
The one thing I'm going to say is never underestimate what your kids know. Always go in their rooms and look through their boxes, look under their beds, look in their shoe boxes.
Yes.
It's those shoe boxes.
It's the shoe boxes.
It is.
I'm telling you. Look in the pillowcase, look under the mattress, go and do random sweeps in your kid's room. You'd be surprised the stuff you come across. And when you see it, don't judge them. Don't judge them.
Yeah.
Just let them know in a subtle way like I did. Hey, we need to have a talk. Mm. When I found things in my kids' room, I set it on their dresser. Mm. So that when they went in their bedroom.
They already knew. Like, oh, man, she knows.
I'm going to know I got a bone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we're going to have a conversation because, you know, for what? Why are you smoking weed? Why are you doing this? Like, I need to understand. So help me understand what this is, because my son was carrying a pistol at 15. I didn't know he had a bounty on his head.
Wow.
Only reason why I found out is because he got beat up. And I went to go get the guy that put his hands on my baby. But it all comes out. We can't underestimate what these kids are exposed to. As parents, we get so caught up in what we're doing, we're not paying attention at all. We're not conscious because we're so caught up in Facebook and social media and the drama. You're not even understanding or noticing that your kid is crying out for help.
Yeah.
So as parents, we got to be sensitive when we come home from work. You know, we have got to leave work outside the door and be focused and present on our kids. Make them put those phones down. Mm-hmm. Put them down.
Yes.
It's a time and a place for everything, but definitely do the conversations that are uncomfortable. Talk about sexuality and how present it is in high school.
Yeah.
Talk about the guns, because your kid could be carrying a gun and you don't even know they're being bullied.
Yeah.
You don't even know. They could be in gangs. You don't even know. For a long time, I thought my kids were the victims. No, they weren't the victims. They were the leaders. Them little jokers was out there cutting up. You hear me?
Yeah.
Until it came knocking on my door.
Yeah.
Then the reality set in. And then I had to be present,
yeah,
mind, body, and soul. So we got to have those conversations. Like, don't think just because your kid is 16 that they're not being bullied.
Because
kids are going to naturally protect themselves.
Yeah.
Period.
Or vice versa, that they're not the one doing the bullying.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Because my kids was
terrible. Yeah. They're strong leaders.
They are.
Strong leaders.
They are much strong leaders today. Yes. And I thank God for that. But they were something else when they were little. Well, and they did it as a team.
They always do. Those siblings,
they band
do.
Together.
They always do. I always say, if my kids aren't fighting, they're teaming up and doing something they shouldn't be.
Exactly.
Yep. Anytime I hear that giggling, I know something's going on.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. Right. Yeah. But yeah, I would definitely say that. Have the conversations, have the room sweeps. Don't be afraid to talk about it. Don't assume that your child is perfect, because a lot of times as parents, we don't like taking criticism about our kids.
Yes.
We don't.
Yeah.
We don't want to deal with that reality, you know. But if you don't, it could be the difference between life and death.
Yes.
You know, I've had many parents knock on my door about my kids, ready to fight. Ready to fight. So we can't be so naive to the streets and what the streets have to offer our kids.
Yeah,
if it wasn't good, if it wasn't fun, it wouldn't be out there.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It wouldn't introduce them to things that have their mind going, you know, because kids are so curious.
They are.
Yeah.
And if it feels good, they're going to want it again, you know? So, yeah.
And one room sweep can stop a whole cycle of drama and grief.
Yes.
And, you know, everything that's going on in the streets with these kids, especially our, you know, our young Black boys, you know, so much is going on. And they're, like you said, gravitated towards the streets. So one room sweep can stop a whole bunch of families from having to deal with the grieving process and being hurt.
And to take it a step further, one room sweep, one conversation, and getting the kid the help they need. Don't be afraid to reach out and, like you said, use your resources and get them the help they need. Because once you have the conversations and do the room sweep, find your resources. Mm-hmm. You know, if you need to take them out, you need to get them, you know, counseling, or if you need to get them and talk to somebody in the community, get them a mentor. There's a ton of great programs out there.
Yes.
You know, find them something that they can find just as fun. It's just
and you know, that's the one thing I commend Mahone for, Sean Mahone.
Yeah.
You know, he fights. He fights.
Yeah.
You know, even though he gets a lot of slack and a lot of opposition, he fights, you know, to be a part. Because I just introduced him to one of my girlfriends to talk to her son.
Yeah.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? And her son is not a bad kid. He's an honor roll student. He's a football player. He's, you know, at Central Catholic. But they have these moments.
Yeah.
They have these hiccups growing up as young men. If you're in a house full of girls, who is there for you to identify
absolutely.
With?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? So, I thank God for people like Sean Mahone.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need more people like him.
Absolutely.
You know? So, Shout out to you, bro.
Shout out to Sean Mahone. Yes. Well, thank you, Safana, for coming by for the show and telling your story and, you know, definitely keeping, you know, Isaiah's, legacy and memory alive. So we greatly appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
Yes. So
I appreciate you.
All right. We love you. Yes.
Thank you.
You can always come back.
Always.
Listen.
Officially Mud Talk certified.
All right, y'all.
Yes. All right. Well, make